You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I am here to help you break free from binging, guilt, body shame, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to call in with questions, the number for LA Talk Radio is 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem when it comes to binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. It's not what you're eating. It's what's eating at you. It's not what you weigh. It's what's weighing on you. So give me a call and let's find a way to banish binging for good so you can live a binge-free, happy life. How does that sound? Sounds pretty good to me. Let's make it happen. Okay, so today I'm talking about why we binge eat. A lot of us think, well, binging has to do with control or willpower or something like that. A lot of us blame food when we're out of control with food. And one of the ways that lots of people think about it is, hey, if I was drinking alcohol or cigarettes or smoking cigarettes as a way of coping, I could just quit cold turkey. But I can't quit eating food because I need food to live. So I'm going to be stuck binging forever. And it's my fault that I have no control over food. I have no willpower. I have no control. The truth is, food does not cause you to binge. Food is a solution to the problem. It is not actually the problem. So I'm going to tell you exactly what does cause binging, and I'm going to tell you how to create change. So first, I just want to say, again, the misconceptions about binging are it's about willpower. No, it's not about willpower. It sure feels like it's about willpower. It's about food. No, it's not about food. Food is actually the solution to the problem. And a lot of people also think that the only way to control binge eating is to go on a diet. No. Actually, dieting can lead to binge eating. By the way, if you're listening on Instagram or watching on Instagram, because I also live stream the radio show on Instagram, and you have a question, please feel free to drop a question or a comment in the comments on my Instagram. So which of those do you believe? Do you think it's willpower? Do you think the food is the problem? Do you think you're a food addict? Do you think dieting is the only way that will help you? Caller is on the line. Hi, caller.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Janine. How are you?
Hi, Janine. Hi. Great to hear from you. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you. I love your radio show. I listen all the time, and I'm excited that I have a chance to call in today and talk to you.
I'm so excited.
I just wanted to get some input from you. I received a phone call from a family member last week, followed up by a letter. It actually was my first cousin, who basically told me after all these years, probably 25 years, that she believes me, that her father really was abusive to me when I was a child, and he really is like a sexual deviant, and she's very sorry for all the pain she caused me and not believing me. And she sent me a copy of the letter that she confronted him with all his behavior and wrote him, you know, out of his life. And she had, you know, told other family members and all this kind of stuff. So after many, many years, because I had told the truth in my early 20s and more or less caused a separation in the family because there wasn't really any awareness that there is now about things, and people didn't believe me, and it just caused a big fiasco, and I basically like got estranged from the family. So it's like after all this time, I feel I got like this vindication, like I'm believed, and she's telling other people, and he's, you know, getting his due, like that kind of stuff. But I guess I always thought of all this time, like if I was validated and accepted and believed and understood by all the people all these years who didn't believe me, and I would feel like relieved or healed or like a yes feeling, like he got it, like that kind of stuff. And I'm really surprised it doesn't feel like that at all. Like I'm sort of like struggling to even put into words what it does feel like.
Well, often we have this idea of how things are going to feel, and then they happen and we feel very differently. But I let me normalize that why you're not jumping up and down going validated at last, because it's been 25 years in which you were not believed, in which there was a rift in the family, in which you had to bear all of this resentment and, you know, anger and frustration and sadness, and deal with the result of this abuse on your own. And so one letter right. saying, hey, yeah, you know what, actually, you were right, I'm sorry, while tremendously validating, is also doesn't erase those 25 years.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a good point. Because a part of me feels like I am glad to be validated. And the other part feels like, yeah, I told you that 25 years ago. Like, yeah, I know he's a sexual deviant. I told you, you know? So yeah, it is really a mixed feeling. Like, yes. I am glad to be validated, but it doesn't hold the power that I thought it would at all. It didn't trigger me, which I'm really glad, because her letter to him was really confrontational. A lot of it was about his behavior towards me and, you know, how wrong that was. And like, she really called him out and she didn't hold back at all. So I'm glad he got confronted with it, but it just doesn't do what I thought it was going to do, which would be like a relief or like a, I don't know. And then the other part of me thought maybe like, hey, maybe I've made my own peace with things, and like whatever they do is they do, and I still like doing my own thing. It didn't set me into like a, you know, a binge phase or a depression or anything. So that part was, I thought really was good, but doesn't really feel like I thought it would feel. It's just so strange.
Well, let me give you an analogy. Imagine someone has been wrongfully imprisoned. And you've been in an emotional prison for 25 years. Someone's been wrongfully mm-hmm. imprisoned for 25 years. 25 years behind bars. No freedom. Constrained. Cast in a role they didn't play. Cast as a criminal when they're not. And then some evidence comes to light. And now, oh my goodness, we wrongfully accused this person and they are released from prison. Well, are they just going to go like, hallelujah, this is awesome? Yes, they are. Is it going to take away 25 years of being in prison? Are they still going to hang on to some thoughts and feelings of, well, you know, it took you a long enough time to see the truth?
Right, right. Okay, that's a good point. Yeah. So there's a lot of mixed feelings about it. And maybe that part of me that was thinking like, oh, it'd be so great, it'd be so wonderful, is more like that little kid part that wanted to believe, though I was, you know, in my 20s at the time, but I was like that younger part of me that like once believed, like I finally got the courage to say it. And I honestly thought people would believe me. I really, really did, because, you know, it's the truth. But they didn't. So maybe that part of me that, you know, always wanted to be believed thought it was going to be like so great to be believed. But it's just okay, you know. So, but I do like your analogy. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, without contextualizing it, like, yes, it's really nice to be believed. But how come it took 25 years? How come you've been right. the black sheep of the family for 25 years, called a liar, called a, I'm sure, a troublemaker, you know, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And now they believe you. That's great. But you still live those 25 years and you have every right to feel a whole range of feelings about this situation, from relief and
right.
happiness to resentment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All of it. I mean, there is a lot. And the funny thing is, like, I got the validation and now I feel like I don't even need them to believe me anymore, because I've gotten to the spot where I know it's true. And I, like, whether they believe me or they don't believe me, that's their thing. You know, I guess I didn't even really need their validation anymore, which I thought I did, because I know what's the truth. And I, you know, worked hard and on processing it and dealing with different emotions through it. And all that doesn't go away. Like, it doesn't take the abuse away, even though somebody says, yeah, you're right, you were. It doesn't take that away. And I still had to deal with all that burden of the impact of the trauma, let alone people not believing me, you know?
So the win here is that you didn't use food to cope, and that you realize that you've done a lot of healing and you don't need it to come right. from without. You don't need it to come from the family to tell you, yes, we believe you, finally. You have
right.
from within.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So then from that standpoint, like you're saying, it does feel, I do feel, you know, just grateful and proud of myself that I've come as far as I have come. And it's, I appreciate you normalizing that there's still a lot of emotions there about the whole situation that don't go away because somebody said, oh, you're right. You're right. You are. It really did happen. but it is nice to get an apology, but and believed, but it doesn't change it. So yeah, that's interesting. That's helpful to be hear you say it in the context of, like, you were in jail for 25 years. Like, you know, I was convicted as being the bad, you know, wrong liar. And I wasn't. I never was that.
And you did a lot of work, you know, sounds like before this letter, before this, you did a lot of work to
right.
learn to relate differently with yourself. And I guess mm-hmm. this is kind of showing you the path of that. And also that, you know, sometimes we have this idea of how things are going to be, whether it's, oh, when I'm finally believed, or, oh, when I lose this weight, or, oh, when I get that, whatever that is, that new job or that new whatever, I'm going to feel the certain way. And well, we often usually do not feel the way we think we're going to feel, because happiness is an inside job and you already did that work on yourself. This is just, it's nice.
Yeah. But yeah, it is nice, but it's not the be all and the end all. And I'm really glad, like, even to see in black and white, like him getting confronted with it, it didn't trigger me, which I was really, really impressed and surprised that that didn't set me off. So I'm glad about that.
That means you've healed. You've healed a great deal, because when we heal, we're not triggered. When we don't heal, we're mm-hmm. just the walking wounded. And as soon as anything comes close to that emotional wound, we're triggered. When something happens and we don't get triggered, it means, it's the difference between walking around with an open wound and or a scab or a scar where it used to hurt. And when we have a scar, right. an emotional scar where it used to hurt, and someone touches that place, it's like, oh, yeah, that used to hurt. It doesn't hurt anymore.
Right. It doesn't hurt anymore. So that is a wonderful space to be in. It really is. It is it is a hard process to get there, but it's so worth it. Like, I remember times when I was trying to process it, I felt like I was going to literally die. Like, it made me feel like I couldn't deal with it. But it is. It's so different being on the other side. I live so much of my life on the side of being triggered. So it's really wonderful.
Oh, that is beautiful.
So thank you for validating that. That feels good.
You are welcome, Janine. I'm so glad to hear from you and glad that you have this update and glad that you're feeling good about you, not depending on someone else's idea or recognition or validation, but that you've done that for you. And that's so powerful.
Yeah. And thank you for all your help. I get so much out of everything that you have to offer. So I really appreciate it.
You are so welcome. Please feel free to call me anytime. Would always love to talk.
Okay. I will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Well, you know, Janine actually inadvertently gave me the perfect segue to the topic of why do I binge eat? You know, why do you binge eat? And, you know, the reason for binging is psychological. And that means, hey, let's talk about the F word. Not that F word. Fat. Or the other F word. No, I am talking about the F word that means feelings. Feelings. Oh, our culture tells us, don't feel anything. You are strong if you don't feel your feelings. You are weak if you feel them. Don't give in to feelings. Fight. Be strong. Push them away. Well, these feelings are anger, sadness, loneliness, guilt, anxiety, shame, and more. And what do we do when we have feelings, which are, by the way, just reactions to situations? They are not character flaws. They are reactions to situations. And with all these prohibitions against feeling feelings, what do you do? Well, we don't learn to respond to ourselves in a kind and supportive and loving way. We want to avoid those feelings because we're told the very existence of those feelings is somehow not a good thing. So don't feel your feelings. And one way to do this is by stuffing them, eating. And why? Because food is associated with comfort, love, safety. We numb out, we escape, we celebrate. Turning to food is a lot easier than processing our feelings. Casey is saying, I eat when I feel. Yeah, you eat so you don't feel, right? Essentially, if you feel something and then you eat as a response, then that means there's a part of you that is trying not to feel your feelings. And I just want to say something about feeling your feelings. Which is that we also don't learn how to feel our feelings. People tell me all the time, I think I talk about this almost every week, oh, you just need to sit in your feelings. They think, oh, I just need to sit in my feelings. No, sitting in your feelings doesn't help. You can't sit your feelings away. You can't stuff them down. You can't positive think them away. You can't be grateful and have your feelings go away. You can't ignore them. You can't drop them. The only way to deal with feelings is to actually feel them and to respond to them. So how do we feel feelings? By the way, we first identify them. What am I feeling? What is going on with me? Often if we're turning to food, it means something. If we're turning to food and we're not hungry, it means we are turning to food because we're turning away from something else, something that is uncomfortable. So be really curious about why. What is this eating doing for me? What is it keeping me from? What is it? What am I escaping? What am I numbing? And if you don't know, go get your food mood formula secret at my website or in my bio. If you're on Instagram, go download your free food mood formula secret and you can discover how the foods you eat give you clues about what it is that is eating at you, what it is that you're actually feeling. So first we identify it, then we express it. We have to talk about like what's bothering us. This is upsetting me because of this. This is making me sad because of this. And then we respond to ourselves like we would a friend. And here's where a lot of people get it wrong. They tell themselves or other people, oh, it's not that bad. It could be worse. Look on the bright side. It's going to be okay. You know what that is? That's actually being dismissive. the way to respond to feelings is to say, you know what? That's really horrible. That sucks. That's painful. That's upsetting. That's really annoying. That's frustrating. Oh, yeah, that's bad. Validate it. Acknowledge it. And then you can say something along the lines of, I've been through tough things before. I'm going to get through this. I survived what happened. I'm going to survive talking about it or feeling it. And that's one thing I wanted to say to Janine, which was, you know, when we survive the terrible things that can happen to her, to us, and what happened to her was truly, truly terrible, being abused by an uncle at a young age. Terrible. But you can survive talking about the thing that affected you. You really can. And when you talk about it and you mourn it and you process it, then you're free. Then you're not bothered by all these feelings. You're not that open wound. And then you can go, you know, go about and think about your day, not your diet, instead of constantly focusing on food, because it's easier to focus on food and how much you weigh and, oh my gosh, rather than, ooh, this is weighing on me. That's hard to talk about. So we binge as a way of coping with emotions. It does not mean that you are a food addict. It does not mean that you have no willpower, and it does not mean that you have no control. It means that you are using a coping strategy to try to help yourself, but it is hurting you more than it is helping you. It is, I like to call it a frenemy. It is a friend. It is doing something for you. It is helping you escape a feeling. It is helping you go numb. You know, that binge zone where you're not feeling anything and you're just like mindlessly eating, but you're not, like, you just feel kind of dead inside. It's helping you escape, numb, celebrate, displace. Easier to get mad at yourself for eating than it is to get mad at someone in your life who's pissing you off. So it is a way of coping that both helps you and hurts you. When you find a new way of coping, guess what? The behavior goes away. Your relationship with food normalizes. This is not something you have to deal with the rest of your life. And then you are free. I like to call it liberated. And you could just live a binge-free, happy life. And the only time you think about food is breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks. And what do I want? Not what should I have? I was good because I had that. Ooh, I was bad because I had that. No, 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 no. Ugh, that is no way to live. We're supposed to enjoy food. It's one of the pleasures of life. It's hard to enjoy it when you're in a toxic relationship with it, when it is your best friend and your worst enemy in one. So here are three reasons for binging. One is restriction. Do you know that people shop more during sales? Now, why do they shop more during sales? It seems like, oh, well, they just don't want to lose out on the great deal. And that's true. They don't want to lose out on the great deal because this is their chance to get the great deal. So grab it while they can. Otherwise, it's going to go away and the great deal will be gone. Same with food. We binge because we tell ourselves we can't have something. So when we get a chance to have it, we binge on it. Deprivation, the anticipation of deprivation or the experience of deprivation will make you want something more. And if you tell yourself you can't have anything with a carb or cheese or sugar or whatever your forbidden foods are, if you tell yourself you can't have it, you're going to want it more. And then when you do let yourself have it, because eventually, you know, it gets to be too much and you have the thing, it's hard to stop because you're because then it's that all or nothing mentality. Well, I had one cookie, so I might as well have the whole box of Oreos because I'm never going to have them again because I'm going on a diet tomorrow and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be good until I lose weight and then, you know, rinse and repeat. So if you forbid yourself from having your favorite food, whether it is pizza, ice cream, cookies, or falafel or anything with a carb, whatever it is, you're going to want it more. And then when you either allow yourself to have a cheat day or you just give in and have it, it's hard to stop. That's why diets fail. That's why diets lead to binging. This is exactly why we have the diet binge cycle. A lot of people think, oh no, diets keep me from binging. If I was not on a diet, I would just eat the kitchen. Well, no, if you're on a diet and you're telling yourself you can't have this, this, and this, and this, eventually you're going to eat the kitchen because you're going to want the thing you can't have. Another unusual, not, I mean, it's not unusual, but it's unusual in that people aren't really talking about it, except for me talking about it. Another reason for binging is turning emotional pain into physical pain. And this is an unconscious process. In my book, The Binge Cure, I talk about a woman who had a bad breakup. By the way, here's my shameless self-promotion. Here's The Binge Cure. If you don't have your copy, it is available on Amazon in hardcover, paperback, Kindle, and audiobook if you want me to read it to you. I talk about a woman who goes through a bad breakup and she ordered pizza. And that pizza came and she was only going to have one slice, right? Well, that one slice turned into another, 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 another. And before you know it, she had eaten the entire pizza by herself. And it was not a small individual pizza. It was a pizza for multiple people. And so by the time she was finished eating this pizza, she was in horrible pain. Like she just, like her stomach hurt so much. She couldn't move. She couldn't breathe. She felt such physical pain. It was all that she could think about. So what happened? Unconsciously, unbeknownst to herself, because we have an unconscious, our hidden parts of our mind is often, you know, behind the driver's seat. She converted the emotional pain over this breakup into physical pain. So it went from a heartache to a stomachache. It's easier to focus on physical pain. When you're in physical pain, it's hard to think about anything else. You're just like, oh, it hurts so much. So it's also easier to get rid of physical pain than emotional pain. And this woman had to deal with the emotional pain of the breakup, what it meant to her, the loss, all of that, so that she could stop ordering pizza and eating all of it as a way of coping. And I will give you an update that is not in the book, which is that since this situation, she's had other difficult things that have happened. And guess what? She no longer orders pizza and eats it until the point where she's stuffed and in pain. She goes through what she's feeling and she expresses her feeling and she responds to herself and she's free. She's liberated. So if you ever eat to the point where you are in physical pain, I want you to look at and consider what emotional pain might you be actually feeling and using food to. Something's happening with my internet. I don't know what's going on. Am I still frozen? Something weird is happening with my internet. Sam, am I back? Okay. Okay. Technology, always so much fun. All right, all right. Another reason we binge is that we use food as a distraction or a displacement from what is really bothering us. So we are, you know, conditioned to avoid our feelings rather than feel them, as we know. So when you experience something uncomfortable, unpleasant, icky, yucky, difficult, painful, you might turn to food to distract yourself, numb yourself, or, you know, focus on what you just ate instead of on looking at what is eating at you. In fact, you know, what comes to mind is someone who had a fight with her husband, and she had this big, terrible fight. It was really contentious. It was really nasty. And she started to tell me about it. And then she said, yeah, I'm so mad at him because, you know, this and this and this, he didn't do this and he did do this. And then she said, but you know what, what's really pissing me off is I'm so mad at myself. Because, you know, what did I do after that? I ate a bag of Doritos. So you can see how eating the bag of Doritos, which, by the way, if you know the food mood formula, is absolutely in line with feeling angry emotions. She got mad at herself for eating the Doritos when really she's mad at her husband for a bunch of different reasons. So that's called what I call it boomerang binging. You know, we got to think about frisbee feelings instead of boomerang binging. Frisbee feelings is like expressing yourself outward. Ugh. This is upsetting me. I'm upset at this situation, at this person. This is this out there. That's making me mad, directing it outward. Boomerang binging is when you start to do that, or maybe you don't even recognize that you're upset at someone else, but you just turn it right back around on yourself, like she did. Oh, so mad at myself for eating Doritos. Bad me. No, that was the boomerang. So as you can see, when it comes to binge eating, food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem. The problem might be deprivation, not letting yourself have what you want, which only makes you want it more. And then when you start having it, all or nothing mentality, which is, well, I had a little, I might as well have a lot because I can't have any more tomorrow. Or it's a way of turning emotional pain to physical. By the way, it's not just your stomach that we have a mind-body connection. It's not always related with food, but if you can relate to this, what about this idea? Kylene, are you here on Instagram? Kylene has written me that she used to have really, really bad migraines, And I asked her, well, if you weren't thinking about, you know, the pain, what would be painful to think about? What are the painful thoughts that are affecting you? Kylene is here. Yes, yes, Kylene. Feel free to comment on Instagram. So I'm just going to speak for you because I think you're at work and you can't speak. You can't join. So you just tell me if I have this right, that she had these really bad migraines and started considering, well, what was it that was painful to think about? What was it that was hard for her to think about? And when she identified those painful thoughts, conflicts, situations in her life that were really hard to think about, really painful to think about, she's saying, it's true. Then guess what happened? As she processed those painful thoughts, the pain in her head became less. The migraines diminished. She said 35 years of migraines. 35 years of migraines. And she would get have shots and Botox in her head and all kinds of stuff. 35 years of migraines got better when she just started looking at her painful thoughts. This is how powerful our mind-body connection is. It is incredibly powerful. Someone else had back problems, such bad back problems that they were going to like get some kind of exploratory surgery. Went to all kinds of back doctors, acupuncture, chiropractors, everything you can think of. Nothing worked. Just terrible, terrible, terrible back problems to the point that this person was sort of incapacitated for a couple of months. And no one could figure out, even the surgeons, they were going to do this exploration of, you know, exploratory, that's the word, exploratory surgery to figure out what the heck was going on with her back. This was maybe 15 years ago. I think now with imaging, they could have, you know, dispensed with the exploratory surgery, which she never had, because guess what? I really thought that it was her body expressing something that her mind could not. Her body expressing something that her mind could not. And when we were when we started looking at what was burdening her, what was it that, what, you know, what was she shouldering? What was she carrying on her back? And she felt like, you know, like Axis holding the world on her shoulders. Is that Axis? No, that's the wrong one. You know what I mean. When she really looked at what was burdening her, she was able to stop having back pain. Our minds are powerful. Our minds can make our bodies express what we don't want to know, or express what our minds cannot think about. You know, it's in a way easier to feel headaches or migraines than it is to have those painful thoughts if you don't have a way of processing those painful thoughts. It's easier to turn emotional pain to physical pain by eating so much that you're in pain than it is to process the heartache of a painful breakup or any disappointment in life. But when you learn new strategies for how to express those feelings and respond to yourself, guess what? Everything changes. So you really have to get to the root of why you are eating instead of focusing on what you are eating. It is not what you are eating that is the problem. It's why. It is what's eating at you. So, okay, what do you do? First of all, use the food mood formula to identify what it is that's going on if you're having any trouble. And very briefly, this is the food mood formula. If you're not familiar with it, if you are familiar with it, it doesn't hurt to hear about it again. This is one area where repetition is helpful. So anything that's creamy, soft, creamy foods are associated with a need for comfort. Ice cream, yogurt, anything creamy. Need for comfort. Filling foods, pizza, pasta, burgers, bread, cake, muffins, anything that kind of takes up space within you, that's associated with filling a void. So by the way, if you need comfort, got to find new ways of comforting yourself that don't involve eating. If it's filling a void, you want to look at the empty spaces in your life, the holes in your life, and figure out how to fill them. Whatever those holes are, maybe you're missing friends, a significant other, maybe, you know, career satisfaction, maybe something is going on in your life or not going on that is leaving an emptiness that you're symbolically filling with food. Remember the woman who got so mad at her husband and did the boomerang binging? She was really mad at him, but then, oh no, she was mad at herself because she ate Doritos. No, anything with a crunch, Kylie is saying dog. Yeah, you're missing a dog. Kylie lost her dog and is missing a dog in her life. Yeah, that's a significant hole. That is a huge void. I'm so sorry, Kylie. You know, as well, my giant guy is not here with me, but He's a big 165-pound Great Dane, but he's also a huge presence and just brings so much love in our family and our life. So, you know, when you lose your dog, it's so painful. And I hope that you find some doggy energy, get some doggy energy in your life soon, and that's really hard. So anything with a crunch is associated with forms of anger. Frustration, irritation, annoyance, anger, rage. And by the way, anger, a lot of people say, well, I'm not an angry person. Oh, but do you have any trouble getting mad at yourself for eating? You're not an angry person. You're a person who's angry for a reason. Anger is not a character flaw. It is just a reaction to a situation. Other people tell me things like this. Well, I can't get mad. I mean, like, I'm not going to throw things at someone or hit the wall. Well, that's a behavioral expression of anger, which is not so good. That's very different from just the feeling of anger. The feeling of anger is just what you feel. Hitting something, throwing things, that's an expression of anger, a bad expression of anger. That's different from just the experience, the feeling of anger. So if you are angry and you find yourself turning to a lot of crunchy foods, really learn ways of expressing that with words instead of with crunchy food or, you know, the idea of throwing something or hitting something or someone. Chocolate. So chocolate is either creamy, people like creamy center chocolate, milk chocolate, that's associated with Casey, I'm going to get to that question in a second. What if it's all of those things at once? So with chocolate, people often they'll like chocolate with creamy centers or milk chocolate. That's associated with the creamy category. Or they will only eat dark chocolate or chocolate with nuts. That is the crunchy category. And if it is something that's not chocolate and it's just sweets, well, maybe you need more sweetness in your life. So the question is, what if it's all those feelings at once? Well, generally, there's a dominant feeling and then a secondary or tertiary feeling. So for example, lots of people say, well, I can't dream of having ice cream without something crunchy in it. So the predominant thing is ice cream, which is a need for comfort. And then the anger piece is a little bit secondary. If it's all at once and you feel like you're eating the kitchen, look at the first thing you ate. That is the predominant one. And also, we often feel many things at once. So, you know, you need comfort. You have something, you know, a void in your life. Those things go together. So often we do have mixed feelings, in which case you've got to learn how to respond to all of them. But if you want to look at what the primary one is, if it's a food that incorporates both those categories, what is the main portion of the food? Like ice cream with nuts and crunchy things in it. Ice cream's the main part. Crunch is the second. So that's one way to distinguish it. So first you identify what it is that you are feeling. Use the food mood formula. Then you express what it is that you are feeling. And that's in like whole sentences. I'm very upset because, you know, I feel lonely because I don't have a dog. I'm Kylene, I'm channeling you. I feel upset that I don't have a dog. I feel sad that I don't have a dog. Without a dog, my house feels empty. Without a dog, I feel that there's something missing in my life. Dogs bring so much love and companionship, and there's just they just bring joyful energy. Without a dog, I'm not getting out and taking the walks that I usually do. And I really want, like, I want to go with my dog to do those things. It's really hard to do it by myself. These are all the things I'm talking about off the top of my head that Kylene might think. You express that. It's lonely without a dog. It's sad without a dog. I'm upset that I don't have a dog. And I'm just using just the one dog thing situation, but, you know, usually it's a lot of different things. Kylene says I am channeling her well. Okay, good. And then you respond to yourself. And this is, again, the most important part of this is not to dismiss. This is where a lot of times it's, but it could be worse. These are first world problems. Some people don't have enough to eat. Other people are just barely struggling. What about the people in Africa? What about the people who are, you know, in a flood? What about the people in Ukraine? I shouldn't be complaining about this. I should be grateful for everything I have. No. Comparison is the thief of joy. So the response part is, hey, this is where my acronym VARY comes in. Validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So continuing Kylene's example of not having a dog, of course I feel this way. I've had dogs my entire life. My dogs are like my kids. They are everything to me. Dogs have my heart. I am passionate about dogs. I love dogs. Dogs fill a void in my life and in my soul. Having a dog is so important to me. So of course I feel so bad that I don't have a dog right now. So hard. And how else could I feel? Of course I feel this way. Who wouldn't feel this way given, you know, what dogs are to me? So let's validate and acknowledge. And then reassure is, this is a hard time. I'm going through this hard time right now. I've been through hard things before. I am resilient. And maybe I'm going to make a plan for when I'm going to have that dog energy back in my life. I'm going to make a plan for that so that I have something to look forward to. Right? That's how we deal with feelings. We identify them. We express them. Oh, and I should just say something I hear a lot. Well, I'm mad at my boss. I can't tell my boss I'm mad. No, you can't. Certainly not. And I'm not saying tell the person that you're mad at that you're mad at them. Sometimes that's okay. Sometimes that doesn't go very well. Sometimes you definitely can't do it. Sometimes you can't do it anyway because you're mad at something that you can't get mad at, like directly, like you're mad at COVID. Like you can't, you know, bring COVID into the room and say, now look here. Really upset at the way that you disrupted the world the last couple of years. But you can express it. So even if, or you could be mad at someone who's no longer living. I mean, there are so many ways that we can express something without having to say it directly to the person. You need to get it out though. That's why journaling or talking to a friend or being in a support group can really help. You know, that's one of the wonderful things I love about my Facebook community, Food for Thought community, and also my Binge Free Babes community is people are really there to support each other. And it's so heartwarming. And when you realize you're not alone and other people are there for you to hear you, so when you can talk about what's bothering you, someone's there to listen and validate, acknowledge, and reassure you, really helps the feeling go away. Because eating, binging is a temporary solution to the problem, not one that lasts forever. So validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. That is how you respond to yourself. Identify, express, journal, be part of a group, and respond to yourself. It takes practice, but practice makes progress. Just like anything that we learn to do, we struggle with it at first. I am learning French. Oh my God. I told my wonderful instructor yesterday, Monsieur Valentin. I said, this is like math. Learning French is like math. And P.S., I'm terrible at math. Oh my gosh. Perfect score on the SAT in English. English, I got that. Anything, you know, heart centered, people centered, psychology centered, a reflection. Oh yes, no problem. Math. Oh, I won't even tell you what I got on my SATs in math. 800. Okay, I'll tell you. 800 in English. I think it was like 550 in math. Like the score they basically give you to show up for the SATs. So I'm like really stupid when it comes to math, but really smart when it comes to English. So learning French is very hard for me because it's like math. It's very hard. But the more that you do it, the more you do it, the easier it gets. The more you do it, the more what is unfamiliar becomes familiar. It's weird at first to start expressing your feelings if you're used to stuffing them or ignoring them. It feels uncomfortable. It feels awkward. It's icky. But eventually, it's freeing. It's liberating. And that's why I talk about liberation and not about recovery when it comes to eating disorders, binge eating included. We recover from a bad breakup. We recover from COVID or the flu. We recover from a disappointment, but we liberate ourselves from binge eating. We put it in our rear view mirror for good by following these steps and finding a new way of expressing yourself and responding to your emotions. So that's why you binge eat, and that's how you can learn not to binge eat. All right, that is the show for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I am here live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio and also Instagram. You can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. Stay curious, not critical, and be nice to yourself this week. You deserve it. See you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rockland, only on